Mr. Tyson, have a seat. Mr. Herdman, we are happy to hear from you. And how long would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal, sir?
5 minutes, Your Honor.
5 minutes, certainly. Come on up.
Good morning. May it please the court. Michael Herdman on behalf of the injured worker appellant, Mr. Rodell Callahan. The issues that we have today, rather the questions presented, are just two simple questions. First, was the safety rule promulgated for the employee's benefit?
And is that a finding of fact?
That is a mixed question of law and fact, Your Honor. So first is analysis of that. What was the purpose of the rule, and did the employee know it? And then second, was the rule enforced such that the employer can then reap the benefit of that rule if an injured worker has violated that rule?
Which particular prong of the analysis are you relying on to get to the result that you're advocating?
Are you referring to the Spruill analysis, which looks at the four different tests that the employer must prove? First, I'm relying on the third prong of that test, Your Honor. First question is, was the rule promulgated for the benefit of the employee? And this is something
that... Would you explain to us, please, briefly, or at least explain to me, because I may be the only one that's confused about this, how that finding is a finding of law?
If it's a finding of fact, then I would argue that there's no credible evidence to support it. Now, if it's a question of law and fact, I think... And I apologize because I don't have a citation stating what the standard of review is for that issue. However, the standard of review for whether the rule is strictly enforced comes from Virginia Electric versus Kromposky, which finds that that's a mixed question of law and fact, Your Honor. And this requires an interpretation of the purpose of the rule as well as the analysis of this court's creation of the rule stating, focusing on the word promulgated, as well as what the aims were of the rule. So regarding the safety rule, there's only one safety rule. In the appellee's brief, they stated that there was also a rule regarding the chocks that were used. They're a wedge to secure the wheels of the truck to make sure it doesn't move. We would argue there's only one safety rule that's at play here, and that's found in the appellee's notice of willful misconduct defense as required by Rule 110 of the rules of the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission, which state that you must provide the rules that you're relying upon within 15 days of the hearing, and you must state the particular act that was violated. And the particular act that was violated was a sequence of securing the vehicle. So first requiring that the vehicle is put in gear, and then that the brake is pulled, as well as the ignition is closed and the door is locked of the truck. Now, this rule, the employer must prove that the rule was made to the benefit of the employee. I think the record...
At least in part, correct?
I would say that the rule must be shown. The employer must prove, I think according to the test in Spruill, that this court created, the employer must prove that this rule was to benefit the employee.
But it doesn't have to be solely for the benefit of the employee, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. And the appellee cited case law showing that a happy byproduct of the rule resulting in protection of the employee as well as the company is still valid. Now, looking at the specific rule, I think the record is replete that the purpose of this rule was to secure the equipment of Goodwill. And the purpose of the rule as well was to ensure government contracts and other lucrative business deals were being secured by Goodwill. So,
because if you don't do the things that are required, you could potentially lose the contract with the company, and therefore the employee would not be able to get paid because there's no work to do.
Exactly, Your Honor.
So why isn't that a benefit to the employee or the claimant?
It's a benefit to Goodwill. In making sure that, I'm sorry, Your Honor, could you restate the question?
Why isn't that a benefit? In other words, you say it must be something that inures to the benefit of the claimant. Isn't making sure that he or she has a job by adherence to the rules that have been adopted to ensure that the products remain safe and viable, so thus the employee can get paid? something that inures to the benefit of the employee.
Well, I'd argue that the focus of the rule is on the safety aspect of it, not on the derivative benefits such as...
The only reason I mentioned it was because you brought them up.
Of course, Your Honor. But the employer, again, going back to the rule, must prove the safety rule was for the benefit of the employee, not for the benefit of the business and then potentially the employee as well.
Can't it be a logical inference and almost a common sense inference that making sure that the truck isn't capable of moving when you don't expect it to move, something that would benefit you as the employee from a safety standpoint?
Yes, Your Honor.
If you're working in the back of said truck?
Yes, Your Honor. And the rule that the truck is stationary, does benefit the employee, but going back to the test, they have to prove that this is made, promulgated for the benefit of the employee, and looking at Webster's 11th edition to brush up on the meaning of the word promulgated is that the rule must be made known or put into force or open declaration. And I would say, looking at this court's the Virginia Supreme Court's analysis in Peanut City versus Jenkins, they found it important in their analysis that the rule was known by the injured worker, and the reasons why violating that rule could cause harm to the injured worker. In this case, Mr. Callahan, he's agreed that he was aware of the rule, but he didn't know the reasons why this rule was important for his safety or why the abrogation of that rule would cause him harm. And there's no evidence in the record that this was conveyed to him, that he was explained why the rule had to be followed, why the breaking of the rule could cause his harm, just that he was told that he needed to follow this rule. Again, this is a rule which is being conveyed to him in a vehicle security policy stating that the employee is responsible for the safety and security of the vehicles. He's not being told that this policy was enacted for the safety of him as an individual. He wasn't being told that
His claim was in this case that he followed the rules, but that the brakes failed and the chocks failed.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
So that's not the same as not knowing that the rules were in place to provide his safety, is it? That's claiming that I followed them and it was simply a failure, and that's a credibility issue that the commission found against when it came to him. Is that correct?
Well, regarding whether he intentionally violated the rule or not, that's an issue that can't be brought before this court successfully on review. We would contest that he, in fact, followed the rule. But he didn't know that not violating the rule would cause his injury. He didn't know, and there's no evidence that he would know, that going into the back of the truck in the forklift, that the truck could roll away from the loading dock just because he hadn't properly secured the vehicle.
Is that a requirement that the employee, I understand the requirement is that at least in part the rule is promulgated for the employee's safety. It may also be for the employer's benefit as well. But is there a requirement that the employee know or be specifically advised this is for your safety?
I believe so, Your Honor.
There is. Okay.
Looking at the Supreme Court of Virginia's determination in Peanut City versus Jenkins, they rely a bit on Larson's on workers' compensation, which states, among other things, that willful failure to use a safety device will succeed only if the employee is given actual, as distinguished from constructive, notice of the rule and an understanding of the danger involved in its violation. And this wasn't, when the Supreme Court was looking at this rule, they didn't contradict that. In fact, they incorporated that into their analysis when they were looking at the actions of Mr. Jenkins.
And taking that point to its absurdity, I don't believe that that's what the Supreme Court meant, is that if the employee is directed to attend a safety clinic, for lack of a better way of putting it, and let's suppose for the sake of argument that he doesn't pay attention and just falls asleep or whatever, he can then claim that he wasn't aware of the rule and thereby be able to make a claim under these circumstances.
Well, I think going to Larson's, he would be found that he had constructive notice of the rule.
And so couldn't the record in this case suggest to you that at a minimum he had constructive knowledge of the rule?
I disagree with that, Your Honor, because he was not told what would happen if he didn't properly secure the vehicle. He was only being told
wasn't told specifically what would happen if you don't put the vehicle in park before you decide to try to get out of it. But common sense and constructive notice would tell you that it presents a real safety issue if you make sure the vehicle's not capable of moving when you're trying to get in and out of it or work around it. what's the difference between chalking a vehicle and make sure it doesn't move and making sure that it's in park or using the emergency brake? I mean, they all have the same purpose, don't they?
They do, Your Honor, to immobilize
the
vehicle.
So why isn't there constructive notice with the chalks and the using of the emergency brake the same way there is with putting a car in park, turning off the engine?
Again, I would say that the employer hasn't met their burden of proving that he was given an understanding as to the importance of the rule.
Heidi Dodson testified that during the interview process, quote, she discussed safety rules with the appellant, including turning off the ignition of the vehicle, removing the keys, engaging the brake, parking brake, and chalking the wheels.
Yes, Your Honor, but she didn't tell him, and the reason why you need to do this is because if you don't, you could be injured. And I think that the lens...
Can't we use our common sense where if you're told that a candle can burn you and you put your hand over the candle and it does burn you, can you claim that I didn't really understand that that could happen?
Well, the evidence demonstrates that the vehicle was left idling at the dock, so one could also make the common sense argument that by engaging the brake on this vehicle, which, by the way, didn't have a park option, the vehicle should be secure, but left idling. So I believe the brake was still enacted. Now, Mr. Callahan could have reasonably considered in that finding that the vehicle was secure. He didn't know that to put it out of idling, that to take out the keys of the ignition could have caused his harm. He could have assumed, with good intent, that he would secure the vehicle enough so that harm wouldn't fall him when he enters the back of the truck with a forklift that then apparently dislodged the truck from where it was.
You are into your rebuttal time. If you would like to continue, you're welcome to. If you want to reserve the rest of your time.
I would, Your Honor. I wish to continue. Okay. Now, the second question here, though, is whether the employer failed to enforce the safety rule. And again, I think, as this is a mixed question of law and fact, I think the record shows that Ms. Dodson only made the barest of efforts to enforce the safety rule. In the safety meeting notes, this is item number 14 on the second page, and there were six items before that and then another 1 to 14 below, that I don't think that she was making a good faith effort to enforce the rules. Again, going back to the Larson's test in Peanut City versus Jenkins, there was no bona fide effort, there was no good faith effort to enforce these rules. She was simply addressing the issue in meetings, stating, I've been told that some people might be violating the issue, violating the safety rule. I'm not aware who's doing it. No one's coming forward. I just want you all to know that you shouldn't violate any of these rules. And this is one of many issues that she was bringing up in the safety meeting, including, trivial issues like throwing away cigarette butts properly. So this was not an issue that I believe she was enforcing. I don't think there's evidence in the records that she was enforcing the rules. Yes, no formal punishment has been made in this case. However, there's not even a verbal warning. There was no supervision on the part of the drivers. There was nobody riding along or looking at the loading docks to tell Mr. Callahan, you need to follow this rule. I see you're not following this rule. And the example of, say, Peanut City, the employer was found to be properly enforcing the rule because he was observing his workers. He was preaching the rule such that everybody was aware of the rule, and then also he was letting workers know that they were violating the rule. So I find that there's no enforcement here such that the employer should be able to benefit from the rule. Thank you.
Thank you. You've got about a minute and a half for rebuttal if you need it.
May it please the court, my name is Steve Tyson, and I represent Rappahannock Goodwill and PMA Insurance Company, workers' compensation carrier for Rappahannock Goodwill. There are two issues in this case. The first issue that the appellant has raised is whether the rules in question, it's rules, it's not a single rule. The claimant has focused on this one written item and wants to say that that's the rule. But our notice of defense was very specific that there are multiple rules, and those rules are to turn off the ignition, remove the keys, chalk the wheels, apply the parking brake. And the claimant, in fact, testified, his initial testimony at the hearing was he, in fact, was aware of those and complied with all of those. And obviously, the deputy commissioner found, and the full commission affirmed this finding, that that testimony was inconsistent.
And went a step further, suggesting that the brakes were defective.
The claimant did suggest that the brakes were defective, but there was evidence offered and admitted that showed that the vehicle was inspected just weeks prior to the incident, and There was a post-incident inspection as well. There was no defect or problem with the brakes. But in terms of the purpose of the rule, that is a finding of fact that is entitled to this court's deference. And in this case, the full commission found that these rules were at least in part for the benefit or the safety of the employees. And indeed, all of these rules designed to secure the vehicle, designed to prevent an unattended, unintentional moving of the vehicle is clearly, and the commission was entitled to find, clearly for the safety of the employees, having a truck, a box truck, a multi-ton box truck, rolling down, rolling away from the loading dock. In this case, the result was the claimant's forklift fell out of the truck, but rolling away and potentially striking workers in the area clearly is for the safety of the employees. The commission made that finding based upon all of that evidence. I think it's manifest that the rule was for the safety of the employees. The commission made that finding, and I think that finding should be affirmed.
Actually,
here.
That determination is self-sustaining because of his failure to do what was expected. The claimant ended up getting injured.
Indeed, and he's the one who drove the forklift onto the box truck that ultimately he says caused it to move despite everything that he said he had done properly, but again, which was contrary to the medical evidence.
Does it make any difference that the rule could be for both the benefit of employee and employer?
It does not. A dual-purpose rule is entirely permissible. In fact, I would submit that even every safety rule has a dual purpose to it. One is obviously to protect the safety of employees, but there's another purpose, and that is an employer that has proper safety rules is going to have lower workers' compensation costs, is not going to lose productivity of employees. So
less exposure to liability. Exactly.
Lose contracts. There are always going to be multiple purposes to those rules. In this case, to the extent the claimant focuses on the one written rule, there was certainly a security of property effect, but there was also preventing a vehicle from moving and injuring others, in this case, including the claimant. So the fact that there's a purpose that the employer might have in promulgating that rule that is not just personal safety does not disqualify that rule from consideration. And I would note that the case law, the case law obviously says that it's a rule for the benefit of the employee, but the statute itself it simply says any reasonable rule or regulation. And so these are very reasonable rules and regulations that the employer propounded or promulgated and provided to the claimant. The appellant has, and I wanted to address this, has argued that it was not communicated to the claimant that the purpose that he would get hurt if he didn't follow these rules. That is not a requirement of either the case law or the statute. What is required is that the rule be found to be for the benefit of the employee, and the commission found that in this case. In terms of enforcement, the appellant has argued, and again focusing on one small item of testimony of Heidi Dawson, states that the way the appellant stated it in his brief was that Ms. Dodson acknowledged that she was aware of rules violations but did not discipline employees. There's no evidence in this record that the employer failed to discipline employees guilty of the willful violation of this rule. What Ms. Dodson said was that, and this is at Appendix 162, nobody had been disciplined because I haven't had that issue. And when it was brought to my attention, nobody wanted to say who had actually been doing it. You can't discipline anonymous employees. So Ms. Dodson did what she could do is she again emphasized it in that September 16th, 2016 meeting where the claimant attended that meeting as well, and he in fact was off from work that day and came in especially to attend that meeting, and she emphasized this rule. That's all the employer could do under the circumstances. And Peanut City Iron, the case cited by the appellant, is just that. It was an employer. It wasn't a question of, well, the employer had records of discipline, reprimands, discharges, terminations, that sort of thing. It was the employer preached the rule. This is what happened in this case. Ms. Dodson went over the rules with the claimant at his interview, went over the rules at another safety meeting in August, some of the rules on August 1st, and then again when it's brought to her attention at a safety meeting on September 16th of 2016. Again, There was no evidence offered of discipline of specific employees, but as Ms. Dodson stated, there wasn't an opportunity to do that because no one was willing to identify it, so she did what she could do. So I believe, Your Honor, that both the rule was for, certainly at least in part, for the safety of employees, and that the rules were enforced by the employer, and therefore the commission properly found that this claim was barred by the claimant's willful misconduct. We would respectfully request that this court affirm the decision of the commission.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kelsey, you've got about a minute and a half, I think.
I'll try to make it brief, Your Honor.
Sorry.
First, going back to the multitude of rules, there is, again, only one rule that's before this, and it's found in the appendix 17 through 19, the exact rules that are before this court, which the employer is claiming that my client abrogated, the appellant. Next, focusing on whether or not the employee should know about the purpose of the rule and the harms in violating it, again, I think there must be focus on the particular choice of the word promulgate, to know or to make known to the employees why the safety rule is existing and how it's in their benefit. And then finally, focusing on the enforcement, it's true that Ms. Dodson was made aware that people were violating the rule, and then she said, well, nobody is telling me who's violating it, so that's it. I can't do anything else. It's essentially what she was saying. I don't believe that meets the test for bona fide enforcement. There was no actual attempt to enforce this rule. She could have taken more affirmative steps. She could have gone to question. She could have supervised her employees. She could have taken more trainings particularly focused on this. She actually mentioned that she didn't even use a knowledge check regarding this particular issue. So simply hearing that people are violating this rule and then doing nothing else beyond that because no one's telling you the rule, I don't believe that's enforcement. And then, you know, to look at the definition of enforcement, that means to compel by threat. There was no threat associated with violating this rule. So therefore, I ask that this court remand for a further decision by the commission after the willful misconduct defense. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll come down and greet counsel.